broadcasting live from the Valley of the Sun, Phoenix, Arizona, in the heart of the great American Southwest. It's Erskine Overnight. Now, here's Erskine.
This hour on Erskine Overnight, we have Cliff High. Now, after this hour is over, I can guarantee you, you're going to want to listen to it again. You can go to ErskineOnRadio.com, E-R-S-K-I-N-E, on radio.com, and download this hour, because it's going to be fascinating. I'm going to do a quote from Cliff High, and this is going to set the tone. Warning. This hour is not for the faint of heart. I'm paraphrasing. Very nasty stuff. It will impact your consciousness in a negative manner, at least at first, and may affect your health. Be warned now. Make a decision now to not listen to this broadcast if you have any health or consciousness problems that may weaken your bodily systems. No bull here. Very serious warning. Do not listen further if weak in heart or mind. That doesn't apply to most of our audience. Cliff, welcome to Erskine Overnight.
Thank you very much, sir. You're a bit of a forecaster yourself, suggesting they're going to want to listen to this stuff twice.
I really believe that they will, because then we've got so much to go over, and people are going to say, did I hear that? And they're going to say, I'm not sure. Go back and listen, and also you'll want to know that your website is halfpasthuman.com, because you're going to want to write that down. We're going to be talking about the website throughout the entire broadcast. You do asymmetrical language trend analysis. That's a mouthful, but what that amounts to is it's the emotional association with words in common usage on the Internet. You've been doing this for the last 10 years. It's a radical linguistics, isn't it?
Correct, and it's actually a little bit longer than 10 years now. I think we're running, 11 or 12, but I started thinking about it in 93 and 94. Didn't write the first software until 1995, though. Took me a while to get the idea straight in my head before I decided to sit down and actually do the work.
So you're listening to the same sort of chatter on the Internet that the CIA listens to and all these others listen to, except they're listening to hear what Al-Qaeda is doing. You're listening to see what the people are thinking and the mood of the populace and what may be coming and what the powers that be have to say, aren't you?
Correct. Whereas the alphabet soup agencies care who says what to whom, we don't. What we care is the words being used in the saying of it, a slightly different context. So I really don't care about who does what. We don't get into email or chat groups, mainly because of the privacy in the case of the former and the choppiness in the case of the latter. But we care about the shift in language over time. So it really doesn't matter to us who is doing what in the conversation. And, in fact, we don't even keep track of that information, unlike the CIA at all. Yeah.
Discovery of Life on Mars by Andrew D. Belasso. That was a major thing that they released information on that. The other thing that you said was major, that we're seeing accelerated chemtrails, 100% increase of reports of chemtrails, very accurate. The checkerboard designs, the various designs that are going up, they're doing something up there. There's no question about it. They're doing something, isn't there?
They reached, according to our work, we saw like in 2007 and 2008 and made a forecast that in the summer of 2009, the whole chemtrail program would reach a point where they had to make a decision. And the decision would have to be to either abandon it and go and try something else, or to get really serious about it and go the extra mile with it for, if you will, that last desperate push to see if you can make it to the shore kind of a deal. So that apparently was the decision they took, and we're seeing reports, as you say, chemtrail reports are up hundreds of percent, maybe even 500 or 600% nationally.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. So they're spraying something. Does this have to do with the pandemic swine flu that may be coming, or is it something else in your opinion? What are you garnering on this? What's your prediction on that? Is it part of the entire scenario?
It is at one level, and that whether or not they intended this is a different issue. We can't go into intent. However, merely blocking sunlight at these levels with the chemtrails, to say nothing of the heavy metals and lighter metals that you're inhaling from them and getting into your food supply, leaving that out totally, Just the fact that they're blocking sunlight is going to reduce vitamin D levels for the populace, making everybody more susceptible to flu and virus and this kind of thing. So because it so seriously impacts your immune system, vitamin D is not really truly a vitamin. It's a, what do they call it, something steroid. It's in the steroid class of proto-hormones. And so it has a huge impact on your body in terms of regulation as well as other stuff. It's not quite as simple as just going along and scrubbing out the bad guys, but it makes your immune system robust, whereas the lack of it makes that same immune system very weak. So as a side effect, that part is occurring. Whether they intended it or not is a secondary issue. Could they use the chemtrails as carriers for something else? Certainly. Are they likely to? It wouldn't surprise me, and I wouldn't put it past them.
They've also been putting out a lot of reports, a lot of chatter about 50% of the population having ET genes. And you make the analogy, and I think it's very appropriate. God's chosen people, like the Israelis say, God's chosen people, well, they're chosen because they have the ET genes, and the powers that be want to use that as a right of royalty, right of divine kings, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's just more of their propaganda that they're putting out. But you've got a major event, and you're saying that in the last 10 and a half years, the largest area of cross links you have ever seen, October 25th, 2009. This is a date that most people will want to put down. From halfpasthuman.com, October 25th, 2009. Why that one date? What's transpiring, and why is it such an important period?
I don't know why. I don't answer why questions. That goes to intent. And if we're talking about the intent of the universe and presenting this particular challenge on that day, I have not got a clue. But what I can tell you is this, that we make a sudden and shockingly rapid shift in the nature of the language that's out there. We'll go from release language, which is where we're at now with all this release of anger and angst and fear words about the everything, and we'll go into building vision language rather suddenly. So, and that suddenness is the shocking part, and then it continues in that same vein with no let up for about 10 and a half days, and then it gets back to a more regular pattern, which is this choppy crocodile kind of tooth pattern in a chart. The interesting part, of course, is that these 10 days elevate us in total emotional tension rather a big jump. So it is as though we're about to see a Cuban Missile Crisis type of an event. If you're old enough to have lived through the early 60s and understood what was going on at the time and remember the kinds of words that were used then, we see many of those same kind of words popping up around that particular date, which is the 25th of October. And it may start a day or two early because we're, you know, frequently off by a day or two. May not really hit your consciousness until October 27th, even if the events actually start on the 25th themselves. But for 10 days, we're going to have that sudden plunge into building tension language, and it should be palpable. We should be able to sense it and see it in the mainstream media. So it wouldn't surprise me if, you know, Israel decided to go crazy on that day and attack the Iranians or you know, something other than that, but still on that same order of weirdness, or just the threat of it held over everybody's head for 10 days as, you know, some major confrontation takes place that never quite develops into war, but we're all scared that it will, something along those lines. In any event,
October 25th, and you say it's actually going to go till December, and you're calling financial destruction a financial tsunami. We're going to talk about that coming, the financial tsunami. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. You can't fix it. It is broken beyond repair. So many of our institutions, our health, our financial, they are beyond repair. We all know we need something new, and our political system, we have to have something new. This is coming. Wait till you hear it from Cliff High, halfpasthuman.com. We're entering a period, and this I absolutely 100% agree with, that is a test of our courage. the test of our convictions and the courage of everyone in the world, especially in the U.S. We are the final, we are the big test ground. Financial destruction, financial tsunami, October 25th through December. You're looking at the collapse of the dollar. What's it going to be replaced with? What's the collapse of the dollar means? The collapse of the dollar as the world's reserve currency. Can you expand on that a little bit, Cliff High?
Sure. The incident that starts off on October 25th actually leads us up to what we call this a release period on November 4th or 5th. And the dollar death actually takes a whole year from November of this year to November 2nd of next year of 2010. Over the course of that year, we'll first have the dollar be rejected as a world global reserve currency, which means for the people in the United States that our currency becomes worth less, to the point where we're going to find it very difficult to do imports. And in many regards, we're likely to see the importation of hyperinflation. There is a possibility that we could skip hyperinflation and go right to this massive deflation. However, in order for that to occur, we would have to have a simultaneous crash and disruption of the entire financial realm, in which case the derivatives would also go, and therefore also would go all digital representation of dollars. And we would be left with only the physical dollars that are actually in existence, which is a small portion of the notional or nominal dollars that they claim to have created. So in other words, there's maybe 1 or 2% of all the dollars that we're playing with now, maybe 1 or 2%, maybe as high as 3%, are actual physical printed paper dollars. If the digital dollars go away, then those physical dollars could retain some value through the rest of next year. If, on the other hand, it dies according to the way in which currencies usually go, which is in chunks and bits and pieces, then it's likely that the digital dollars will come back to us and we'll have to deal with hyperinflation at some level. That might mean $30 or $40 gallon gas, for all I know. But it'll be kind of tempered by the fact of massive waves of unemployment, so not a lot of people will need gasoline the way we used to. So it's a transformational experience we're about to go through. Now, let us bear in mind...
Now, is this going to be U.S. only, Cliff, or is this going to be a worldwide phenomenon?
This could be worldwide. I was just going to get to that. Other countries have gone through such things, but they've done it in isolation. The U.S. is going to lead the rest of the planet through it because we're the head of an empire that's dying. We have 1,000 military bases in 100-plus countries, and we're going to have to withdraw our financial tendrils from the rest of the planet. And believe me, they're extremely extensive. So the hyperinflation is likely to hit the U.S. hardest. Maybe it'll hit Britain and into certain parts of Europe, but maybe not. The other issue, though, is the death of the dollar is going to hit the rest of the planet, and there's going to be a planetary depression, which has already really started, but it's going to get much worse. So China, for instance, is I don't see China as a threat in taking over the U.S. or anything along those lines, simply because they're going to be much more occupied with keeping their own power structure intact as their unemployment escalates to where it might hit 40 or 50% of their populace. And they've got a big populace to contend with. So they've got a huge shift to make over to a consumer economy. That is to say, their powers that be, their power structure, if it wants to survive, has to shift their populace over to a consumer economy and turn their production towards their native needs. Not an easy task to do in a short period of time against a rising background of unemployment. The same thing is kind of going to hit the U.S. in reverse, where we're a consumer economy and we're going to have to be turned rapidly into producing everything we need locally because our dollars are become so worthless as to require buckets of the things just to get anybody to ship anything to us. And we don't make much here anymore. Not that we can't, we just don't. That'll have to change. So in actually one way, we're very much like the German or Japanese industrial system at the end of World War II, waiting to be built from the rubble. And so there's sort of an opportunity here, but it's going to be a rough few years as a result of where we're at now. And the dollar death starts in the November of 2009 and continues all the way through to November of 2010. Will it be replaced by something? Who can say? We haven't invented it yet if that's going to be the case. It's not going to be pushed on us by the powers that be like an Amaro or a central bank or anything like that. And my guess is we'll probably actually be dealing with physical gold and silver swaps and trusted paper representation of gold and physical swaps at a local level.
Well, it needs to be. I mean, it really does. A lot of us are looking at it and saying it's beyond the point of being broken. When you've got derivatives equal to more than the value of the entire Earth as we know it, then you know that something is totally askew. None of these figures, $1 trillion, to count to $1 trillion would take you 31,000 years. It's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. Now, the other thing that you talk about is the swine flu. January through February 2010, especially in Canada, it's going to be a breeding place for the swine flu with the Olympics coming up. You've also got a problem with people having mandatory flu shots or them trying to do that. This is another thing, the swine flu that you're talking about, and I have had a number of people on saying don't take these shots, and this is a major thing that is coming together also, isn't it?
That's correct. As a rule, I mean, and I need to state my bias, I personally don't take regular flu shots and wouldn't take a swine flu shot under any circumstance. And I can stand there and argue with you statistics that say that the vaccines themselves can be proven not to be effective. So the whole idea of vaccines are rather suspect, in my opinion. That aside, or noting that opinion, let's not set it aside, but noting that opinion, the data really suggests that two things are going to occur. A small percentage or some percentage of the populace will accept live virus vaccines this fall, such that by the time we get to January or February and some of these individuals go truck about and may go to the Olympics, they will be part and parcel of the distribution system of a mutated form or enhanced version of the virus. I don't know that it's going to be released from a laboratory or anything like that. What I think we're looking at in our data suggests a more or less natural pathway to mutation, in the sense that if you get the live cell vaccine and it finds some nice virus bits already inside you and combines with those, when you sneeze out that virus, you've sneezed out a new critter, and on it goes until it becomes a nasty kind of a bug. The data suggests that the disease itself will become nasty, nastier than it is, sometime in January or February, or over the course of January, February, I should say. And then it's, as a distribution point, it looks like the Olympics in Vancouver are going to be just an excellent vector to have in all kinds of people who have a reduced immune system due to less exposure of the sun and stressed out from traveling and so on, and an international collection of such individuals to boot. So it's going to be turn out to be a hub for that.
Well, it already has been changing to where Tamiflu and so many other things are not effective against it, and you're saying even more radical changes according to the asymmetric language trend analysis. Now, the other things you talk about are food crops, the chain collapsing. We had the best season for crops in years. The United States had a bountiful season for food crops. But I believe what you're talking about is the chain of command, how to get the crops out to the people, will be collapsing 2010, 2011. Advice you can use, store up some things, and if you don't need them, you've still got them. You can always eat it. More when we get back, and we'll talk about the food crops with Cliff High. Cliff High, halfpasthuman.com. Halfpasthuman.com. Now, you're also talking about, we've got this disease coming in, the dollar collapsing, and you're talking about food crops, the chain collapsing, and possible famine. It isn't that we don't have the food, is it, Cliff? It's just that we won't have the methods to get it to deliver to the people.
No, sorry, I have to dispute you on that. My research tends to suggest that, in fact, we don't have the food. And that the numbers, if you're looking at any government figures here, they're quite bogus. And that this has been the eighth year in a trend of decreasing crop yields globally for the U.S. as well as everybody else. And the quote, green revolution.
Well, I know, Cliff, that California has had terrible, terrible droughts this year. And let's face it, as opposed to what the government says, which I was relying off of their figures, opposed to what the government says, California is our food basket, isn't it, Cliff?
Well, it is up to a certain point with the more perishable foods. But what I actually follow a little greater is the trend is the storable food in the form of grains. So I follow the five noble grains, it's called, including the beans or soybeans. And all of those crop levels are way down. Some of the planters in the Ohio Valley, which is the and is one of our major producing areas, had to replant 3 and 4 times and got virtually no yield. And it was because they essentially had 2 months of no summer during their prime growing period. Plus, there's other issues in terms of some of the crops have to have 3 or 4 or 5 days of dryness after their first wetting to get the seeds to sprout. And instead, they got a period of such wetness that they rotted on the ground. So our middle section of our country, our breadbasket, has done poorly, and this is reflected globally. There's been no extraordinary harvest anywhere on the planet for the last 9 years and decreasing harvests of the five noble grains for the last 8 years.
And so
then
would you,
we can get into the other
are
issues.
You,
like
are,
the
you
fisheries
storing up, are you storing up, Cliff, foods right now?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I don't have a lot of resources, but I've got, I'm a vegetarian, so it becomes relatively easy for me because I can store raw wheat and keep that as a viable food source, for, you know, a decade or longer and grind it and make bread, tortillas, whatever, you know. But I also
The other thing is what's going to be happening with the disappearance and the lack of fertility due to carbon dioxide and also climate changes for fishing. Even fishing's going to be way off, isn't it?
It already is, and I have up here in the Pacific Northwest. Of course, we have an intimate relationship to the fishes, and I used to work for an outfit over here that I laughingly called Wildfish, but it was the Department of Fish and Wildlife. And so I have this connection with them through there. But in any event, yeah, the fisheries are suffering on a planetary scale, and at best, the idea of a commercial fishery exists for only 2 more years. And it may be that this coming fishing season that we'll see just a staggering, shocking level of no harvest. It's, in our data, it folds all in with the hyperinflation that hits in 2010. Which primarily starts off with food issues. And part of the problem is that the collapse of the dollar in value relative to the other currencies of the planet has a tendency to plunge those that are marginal at best in our competitive or cannibalistic capitalist society, which is really what it is at a global level with the corporate capitalists. It causes all these people that are marginal and trying to live on $1 and $2 a day to plunge into just abject poverty. And then it also takes another 2 billion people in the northern hemisphere as the dollar collapses and reduces them down to essentially abject poverty, trying to live on the same level of resources as the $2 a day folk. And this will be everybody you know that's on a fixed income that is derived from the government. Say that you're getting some level of Social Security, and I'm not trying to frighten people here. I'm just stating the way it actually lays out in a hyperinflation scenario. But if you're getting a fixed income, say that your income was $2,000 a month, we'll just use it as a figure. If all of a sudden we get hyperinflation, or if we get hyperinflation over even the course of a month or two, it's beyond the ability of the government to react. And so you'll still get your $2,000, but maybe by the time you get a check, once the hyperinflation has begun, that $2,000 might buy one loaf of bread and a half a gallon of gas. There's just no way of telling how dire it's going to be. However, what we can tell is that we have derivatives that are several times the size of the gross domestic product of the planet. We owe this money technically. We cannot ever pay this money back unless we're willing to make some kind of a physical swap for it. We must default. That default is going to be through the form of hyperinflation, which will crush the dollar.
Now, you have what you call tipping points. Now, a couple of the tipping points are 3/12, 2010, but the big one is July 7th, 2010. July 7th is the next huge date that you have picked, and that's because we're having this convergence of famine, the dollar death, and you've also got what you throw into the mix, the refuseniks, people who are refusing to pay taxes, people who are refusing to participate in the game. And you're saying, we're going to have some truth, we're going to have some honesty coming out, and there's going to be blood.
Unfortunately, I think people will react badly. They need not. We don't have to. None of this stuff I'm telling you is written in stone. None of it has to be violent. But because of so many people have been lied to for so long and their lifestyle, at least in the U.S., is so dependent upon a thin tissue of more lies on more lies, and all that's going to unravel, these people will be extremely irritated. And I expect a lot of them to snap and become violent. But it's actually smarter if we don't. If we get our minds wrapped around this idea ahead of time, then we can react rationally. And when all the chaos falls apart, we can, you know, and everything gets a little bit frothy, then we can be there prepared to guide people through the froth to a much more pleasant outcome. We need not go violent. Unfortunately, you know how it is. You know your neighbors. There's going to be a lot of people that are really irritated that, you know, their retirement is gone. Their house is worth nothing. They don't have a job anymore and so on and so on and so on. And they're going to start taking it out against the political system, as they should. I'm just not particularly favoring the idea of lynching politicians or anything extreme. We need to get really serious about this and reorganize our whole system rather than expend our energies in needless violence.
Well, you're saying that there could certainly be assassination of bankers, top-level Illuminati, front groups, CFR, trilateralists, etc., TV news, propagandists, personalities, even the whole families could be taken out. So the powers that be, they're sitting on a very precarious throne right now, very precarious, because I love the quote that you have. You quote Gandhi, first they ignore you, then they ridicule you, then they fight you, then you win.
Yeah.
And
you can
there are
tell
ways
where we're
that
at.
It could
they're
happen.
No longer ridiculing.
So they're at the fight stage? They're ready to fight the populace?
It sure looks that way. I believe that let me not say that it's a belief, but I have formed a conclusion that the swine flu has nothing to do with pigs, and it has in fact been released as part of a population control measure, both through direct sources of dealing with ill people, and then through the fear memes that can be generated around a pandemic, along with other things. And they use these techniques over and over and over again. So it's even though I'm stating it as, yes, there's a giant conspiracy out there on the part of these individuals, if you recognize that they do this thing, they are doing it to us again now, and we have to be prepared for it.
Absolutely. They're doing it to us again. Be prepared for it. More when we come back. Cliff High, and it is called www.halfpasthuman.com. Desperate times require desperate measures. The powers that be are not going to want to relinquish control. They're going to watch it not slipping away, but they're going to watch it going away quite rapidly in a process, not a single event, but a process. That's what you're indicating. And one of the things, couple of things that are happening, we could be dropping the handshake for bowing. We also are going to see the use of fear probably being ratcheted up, if it could be anymore, because people are laughing at a lot of this red, orange, blue, green, various symbols for when we are in this state of alert. Some of their fear tactics are back, going back on them, aren't they, Cliff?
There is indeed a backlash, and that's probably why they bring up this 15% issue. Even if factual, even if 15% of all humans on the planet do have some alien DNA, it wouldn't matter. There appears to be a very rising group of a rising demographic, a rising number of individuals that are aware of what the powers that be are doing, at least at some level, and the manipulation to which they are exposed. And so the powers that be are threatened by this and will do everything they can to slice that group away from the rest of the population so that they don't act as the leaders that will lead the rest of the population astray, so to speak. And so they are at that point where the powers that be are evidencing a lot of their action is motivated by fear that they're about to hit that wall and everything will just crumble in front of them.
Now, one of the other things you talk about is hyperchronism. What is hyperchronism? You're saying that that's going to be declared by the military mid-2010 as a global health and disease, physical and mental. What is that? Is that enhanced learning or mental ability? What is it?
I wish I could say. What we have in our work is frequently we get descriptions that bring together disparate types of words that seem to describe something that's contradictory. But basically, in this case, what we did was we invented a word, hyperchronism, meaning people that live at a hyper-awareness of time. And it may be that these people are, to some extent, able to manipulate time, for all I know. We don't have a clear description of it, but it's apparently something that's unbidden. You know, the individuals get it from whatever source without asking for it, but nonetheless, it'll be one of these new mental diseases, just like the military will probably declare political dissent to be a mental disease, you know, worthy of being incarcerated in re-education or something along those lines. But they're going to be very definitely aware of the hyperchronism and a little bit freaked out by it.
They're also going, of course, to try to close down the Internet. That's not going to be successful, but they can sure scramble it up a lot, can't they?
They indeed can. That'll be one level of control will be the disruption. They'll make the Internet very much like electricity in Baghdad. You're never sure just which hour of the day you're going to get it, that sort of thing.
Not only that, but they'll be putting out their own propaganda on different things as different people. But, hey, it's nothing that we haven't seen before. Now, what else are – this is coming up. So we have a – dates to look forward to. October 25th is a period where something could severely be happening. By the 7th of July 2010, we could be in a full-scale chaos. We could be in a full-scale revolution, couldn't we, America?
Well, we could indeed. You know the people around you as well as anyone, and just ask yourself if these individuals that you know now are irritated, what will it be like when all of their relatives are unemployed and they're irritated as well? There must be some level of relief. So there's going to be a transformational process, and we're in that now. We've got 100% positive confidence that the transformation will continue all the way into March of 2011, maybe even beyond. But one thing we're also sort of sure of is that one level down in transformation, at the highest level of support we've got, is the word revolution. And this is a metadata layer. It will be beyond merely the U.S. Because of the dollar is going to cause such chaos in so many different countries, there's going to be this revolutionary wave sweeping the planet the way there was a revolutionary wave back in the 1700s that got the U.S. out of all whipped up, as well as the French Revolution. It was no coincidence that all these revolutionary movements occurred at the same period of time.
What do you think it's going to be replaced with, Cliff? What's your finding? Is there a type of a government or type of a system that you're hearing about on the Internet that people say, hey, you know, we've got to be thrashing this out, what it's going to be replaced with? It's one thing to overthrow and to throw it out, which it's broken, it can't be fixed. It's another thing to say, well, okay, but what's better? What do you see? Is this going to be an evolutionary process that we're going to be watching?
It's a revolutionary process in the sense that not only are we going to be throwing things out, but at the same time, in the process of discarding the old, that will mean tearing down a veneer and releasing out information that will alter the way in which humans organize themselves. And we won't be doing it hierarchically, because basically we're in a pyramid fashion now that's got three layers to it. The very top dogs, the middle layer of minions, and then the rest of us. 90% of us are in the bottom layer. We won't be going that route anymore. If we had enough information out there, we could organize asymmetrically, fractally, if you will, such that any given layer of a neural net knows everything that the rest of the net knows in total. And so if there's disruption, it can continue and reform. And imagine it, that if we get rid of the shadow government's walls, we'll have free energy, we'll have anti-gravity, we won't need centralized power systems anymore, we won't need a centralized bank. With free energy, I'll get enough light bulbs that I don't care what the climate condition is, I'll be able to grow food because I can keep it going all the time, that sort of thing, right?
And Cliff, the weird thing about it is the technology's there right now. It's there right now, except for the greedy. We need to help the needy instead of the greedy, and it can be done right now. But we've got to get this current infrastructure changed. For all the good or bad or indifferent that we've been hearing, not only tonight, but over the last weeks, months, years, these are the most exciting periods. This is the most exciting period to be alive. This is a period where we're witnessing a major, major change in consciousness, a major change in the system. And it is a period to where we are very fortunate that we can play a part. You can either sit back and watch or you can play a part in this. We need to be prepared. What can we do in preparation, Cliff? Other than, I know you say store some food. That's a good thing. Maybe buy some gold and silver. maybe stock up on some ammo and some weaponry. That wouldn't hurt for self-preservation. Anything else you can think of that we need to be prepared for?
Well, I like the idea of being able to create food. So I urge everybody to learn a skill in producing as much of their own food as possible, whether it's sprouting seeds for fresh vegetables in the winter, that kind of thing, or, you know, full-fledged gardens. Learn to do it yourself, because you're going to need to know that fairly quick. So basically, it's
learn how to put up preserves and things like that, too, because another big plus.
Find out who in your area does what and start trading with them, you know, can apples, give them half back, that kind of thing.
It actually is a very good thing to make friends with the people around you, because everybody has different talents that they can help with, and that's a major plus. One of the things that I was wondering about, Cliff, is halfpasthuman.com. Tell a few things about your website and what's up there, because I found it to be totally fascinating. You've got a lot of free things that you offer up there.
Yeah, we've got some free items. I've got free software if you want to spin the crop circles that are popping up all over. But we're also real soon going to offer this fellow who's a master programmer, formerly used to work for Microsoft. He's got a version coming out that he's going to sell for $19, I think, that does the spinning of the crop circles in three directions, three angles of axis. Truly phenomenal.
You call that swirlies. I like that term, swirlies.
Yeah. Well, they're really weird. If you get in and swirl these things and you have any kind of a meditative bent at all, you get all kinds of effects from them. So we've had people that said, you know, I'm a meditator, blah, blah, blah. After swirling this for 2 hours, I don't have my usual arthritis. I'm going to follow up with it. And I haven't heard back from him, but I've heard enough other reports that other people are getting those kind of effects. But in any event, we've got that. We've got articles, and then we sell our reports there for $10 a pop that are about 50 pages long. But I urge you to really take caution with the warning. If you're not prepared to deal with the information, don't come and read it, because it may disturb you.
I read through about half of it, and I said, whoa, I don't think I need to read the rest of this.
I wouldn't read it if I didn't have to.
Then I went back and picked it up. July 7th, 2010, a day to watch out for. October 25th, 2009, another period to watch out for. The dollar is in serious trouble. We know that. Will probably collapse, and possibly a revolution coming. Read about it. Read about it today and what you can do about it, how you can protect yourself from Cliff High, halfpasthuman.com. I really strongly can't suggest you go up there and check out that website strongly enough. Halfpasthuman.com, Cliff High. Sweet dreams, America.
Catch you next week on Erskine Overnight. And thank you, Oathman, for the wonderful job you're doing. And thank you, Dave, for the website. Go to www.erskineonradio.com. Most of the programs are up there. If you missed anything, erskineonradio.com. It's up there. You can download them. Till next week, sweet dreams.
Ladies and gentlemen, Erskine has left the building.